And good morning. Hi, this is Dr. Morgan. Once again, I was looking at a an article instead of paying attention to the time, but I made it by the skin of my teeth. Good morning. It's good to be with you. I probably should spend some time thanking you for it's still dark outside. You could be in bed sleeping right now. Maybe you're in bed. But thank you for taking the time to tune in. Now, I'm not going to say this is 100% correct, but this is just an observation. I would say the majority of all people, living in Texas right now, they probably don't spend a lot of energy thinking about what would constitute good health. They probably don't really think about improving themselves, other than if they have a problem, they just show up at the doctor, and without question, they will literally take, follow, do whatever is told. Now, I may be going overboard this morning, but I heard a comment recently from a medical doctor, and I thought it was very interesting. Now, this was a class setting, so I really didn't respond to it, but I've thought about it, and I'm just going to present it to you, and I'm going to leave it at that. But there was a topic that as Christians, we're supposed to manage our lives differently. We're supposed to be different in almost every aspect. And so there was an example of being in debt. And if you haven't read the book of Proverbs, doesn't it say that the borrower is a slave to the lender? Yeah, we get that concept. And so what if you had a family member that was in dire straits and they needed help financially? Well, if you are maxed out on 6 credit cards, and you're over the top in loans, and you're living paycheck to paycheck, and even with that, you're having to charge things on a credit card just so you can make basic necessities of life available, like food and water, then you're probably not in a situation to help the person. Well, then the example of health was brought up, and the question was, well, what do you do to prepare? And I don't pretend to know everything that was involved with that, but would you agree with me that as we age, we're probably going to have more health issues than when we're very, very young? Yeah, we agree on that. So the suggestion was given that the way that you prepare for health issues that may come up as you age is you start a retirement account and you put money in the retirement account. And if you save your entire life, that way, when you have a health problem, then you have plenty of money to go to that account and pay for the disease treatment. Is that like a little bit problematic? The other suggestion was to get the best health insurance that you could afford, and that way you're prepared and ready. But you realize there's a whole different ball of wax, folks. On the flip side of the coin, that would be people like you and like me, that they want to be good students of health because they see health as their ticket to being able to be effective and to be productive in the world. And I don't want to say happiness, but I'm assuming that people are a lot happier and productive when they feel good versus when they have severe depression and tremendous amount of pain and suffering. So there we have it. Okay, I'm going to read an article to you, and I'm going to make it just, it's brief, though. To me, this is interesting. So if you want plan A, which is to work very hard at your job and save as much money as possible just so you can deplete that account and give it to physicians, well, you can do that. No one's stopping you. Have at it. Let me read this to you. According to a 2004 meta-analysis reported in the British Medical Journal, which I don't know if you know about the British Medical Journal, but it's considered a very prestigious medical journal. So if a study is published in that journal, that means it's got some weight behind it. All right. Here's what they say. You can reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by 75%. I don't know if that gets your attention, folks, but 75%. You know of any drugs that can reduce cardiovascular disease by 75%. If they're available, let me know, please. You can increase your total life expectancy by 6.6 years. That's another very significant number. And you can increase your life expectancy free from cardiovascular disease by 9 years. Isn't that interesting? That means you can avoid heart problems or artery problems for 9 years when you put a healthy, antioxidant-rich eating plan together. Basically, antioxidants are like sponges. And what they do is they soak up free radicals and they reduce oxidative stress. That means they soak up poison. Okay? Here are the beneficial foods they talked about in the study. They said these are foods that you can eat daily. Cold water fish. Anybody like salmon? Cod? I do. The second food they listed was dark chocolate. Yes, you know, I'm reading that correctly to you. Dark chocolate. They said daily, by the way. Garlic, almonds, red wine. And they said just under a pound of fruits and vegetables a day. Now, there's a reference that I haven't looked up, but they're saying this is every day. So what do we have on the list? We have cold water ocean fish. We have dark chocolate. On this particular study, they included garlic, almonds. I wonder if you could chocolate cover garlic and almonds. Never mind, that wouldn't work. Red wine. But they included just under a pound of fruits and vegetables. I wonder if that's doable. Well, it is for these people. Remember, that's every day. It's not enough to simply eat a pound of carrots, though. So you want to go for a diversity. Anyway, that's interesting right there. So increasing your lifespan by 6.6 years, living an additional 9 years longer without cardiovascular disease. Do you like that? Or plan A is going to be save up as much money as humanly possible. That way, when you need a heart procedure, you can go directly to your money market account and you can deduct $250,000 or whatever the price tag is, and you can hand it over. Of course, you can also, you better make a lot of money with your job, because you may have to repeat that in 5 years. Just because they do a quadruple bypass doesn't mean it won't have to be done again in 4 or 5 or 6 years. That's because if you don't address the reason why it's occurring in the first place, then you get to completely revisit the same lesson over again. It's almost as if this is how this works in the real world. All right. Now, I read an article 2 mornings ago. What's today, Saturday? Yes, Thursday. And I'm telling you, it caught me off guard, and I thought, oh my word, this is fabulous. I have not been giving enough credit to diabetes medication, so here it is right here. According to a 2011 meta-analysis, which that's really just a study that summarizes many studies, according to this 2011 study, the use of medications to treat diabetes, well, it appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is another very prestigious journal. And here's what the researchers discovered. Researchers found that as compared with standard therapy, that means standard doses of medications to treat diabetes. And when I say diabetes, even though I didn't look up every aspect of this, I'm almost positive they're referring to type 2 or the adult onset diabetes. Researchers found that compared with standard therapy, that if they would just increase the dosage of the medication in order to get hemoglobin A1C down to an acceptable range, okay, all they're doing is instead of using the standard of care drugs, they're increasing the dose of those drugs just a little bit more to see if they can get that one marker of diabetes called hemoglobin A1C or A1C, if they can get that down to a more acceptable range, aha, what did they discover? Well, here's a punchline. They were able to reduce 5-year non-fatal heart attacks by 21%. And of course, me being the curious individual that I am, I asked myself, you know, they didn't say it prevented a stroke, and they sure didn't say it prevented cancer. They didn't say it improved arthritis or quality of life. That's their lead benefit right there. 5-year non-fatal heart attacks by 21%. That's what they were able to reduce. And of course, there's probably 30 other criteria that you could... Of course, my concern is, do they have more dementia or more memory loss or cognitive decline or arthritis? There's just a lot of things. You already know what my point is. Even though they were given extra drugs, did that really improve the quality of their life? But when I read that, I thought, hey, well, finally we have some information that upping the dose of type 2 diabetes drugs might actually help in one area. And that one area they chose to write about was the 5-year non-fatal heart attacks. And there was an improvement by 21%. So I said, okay, you know what? That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? All right. But when I got to the end of the study, I read one thing that I found just a little bit disturbing. And this was tucked away toward the very end, but it's still true nonetheless. So, if you read the entire study, you'll find out that it also increases 5-year mortality. You know what that means? How about I just use the word death? It increases death by more than 19%. Okay, I'm just like you are. If a person has symptoms that need medication, you're not going to hear me say, don't do that. But let me give you an example. If a person has a diagnosis of high blood pressure, and they show up at the doctor and they say, Doc, you got to help me. I don't feel good. I have these headaches. Every time I have a headache come on, I check my blood pressure, and it's like 175 over 99. And your doctor says, well, I think we need to do something about your blood pressure. And they say, well, what's your plan? Well, we're going to put you on this medication. Well, what if the medication lowers the blood pressure by about 5%, just enough to stop the symptoms that you're having? Your body's screaming for help. And your arteries are about to bulge, they're bulging at the seams, and they're inflamed, and you have a headache as a consequence of the high blood pressure. Well, they give you a great drug. And the doctor doesn't mess around. He gives you a very potent dose of it. And it lowers your blood pressure, say, to 153 over 90. Well, is that statistically better? Yes. Is that addressing the root cause of the problem and why you have the blood pressure? I don't think so, but that's maybe my opinion this morning. So what do you do if 6 months later you find your blood pressure is kind of going back again, meaning that the root cause of the problem is not being addressed, so your body continues in decline, and you may have a little bit more inflammation that's driving the process. And the heart becomes weaker, your arteries become stiffer, harder. That means the heart has to pump with greater force. I may have given you a clue right there if you're paying attention. So you go back to the doctor and they say, you know what, that drug is not working as well as it used to. This is probably like at the 1 or 2 year mark, and before you know it, a second drug is prescribed to assist with blood pressure. Okay. Anyway, let me cut to the chase. 10 years out, you're taking five medications, all of them for the same symptomatic control of blood pressure. That's great, isn't it? Just great. Well, if you're taking 5 drugs for blood pressure, most likely they're not addressing the very reason why your blood pressure's up. So how do you reverse a disease process? Is it just by giving drugs? All right. Study number 3. I think this happens almost on a daily basis with me. It's just making observations, trying to sort through what a patient is telling me and trying to turn that information around in a way that's beneficial. So if we take drugs to address the symptoms we have, yeah, that's one thing. But wouldn't you rather have your body in such good working order that you don't really require drugs? Of course that's what you want, because every drug contains a little bit of poison, and it has deleterious side effects. That's pretty negative side effects, in case you don't know what that means. So, is that really your interpretation of tremendous health, is I'm only on 5 blood pressure medications? Well, if you could only regain your health and restore your body to its natural, God-given, good working order, then you wouldn't even require those medications. But if you want to follow that protocol, then yes, you need to work very, very hard, save as much money as possible. I don't know, is $300,000 or $400,000 too much to have in your bank account to save up for health problems? You know the story that I heard from the lady the other day? I know this is going to sound bad, but I'm just repeating what she said. But maybe it doesn't sound so bad. Maybe it's just truth and reality. Her husband had prostate cancer. And they presented 2 drugs, chemotherapeutic drugs, as being the solution to his problem. And they told her very, very simply and aggressively, we cannot start treatment unless you make your copay. Now, the drugs were very expensive. And I'm just going to cut to the chase. One shot, I don't even remember the total. But can I suggest this? There was one pill that the copay was $4,000. And there was another chemotherapeutic medication that was highly touted by the oncologist to treat the prostate cancer, the man's prostate cancer. And the copay for that one was $6,000. And so they went along with this for a period of time, but all it meant was they depleted their retirement accounts and their savings. And then when they ran out of that, they started charging it to the credit card. And before they could complete the treatment, which it didn't take long to deplete everything they've worked so hard their entire life for, they called the oncologist and said, we have to stop treatments because we can no longer make the copay. And this is what the nurse told the lady. They said, oh, don't worry about that. We're going to waive the copay. Keep up with the treatment. And they said, well, that's not how you presented this information anyway. I'll get off on that right there. Anyway, next topic. One topic that I think that I'm seeing more clearly is the topic of autoimmunity. And I think that I need to be very, very clear about this. And I think that there's tremendous room for improvement with the way that I understand how the immune system reacts, or what I should say is overreacts. And so let me give you a scenario here. Maybe you have never, ever heard of celiac disease. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that celiac disease is definitely an autoimmune disease. And so with this particular autoimmune disease, it is the lining of the gut that is attacked ultimately by the immune system. And it's overproduction of antibodies. Now, the toxic trigger, or what starts the ball rolling, I mean, number one, a person has to be genetically sensitive or vulnerable to wheat. But maybe one of the issues is that modern genetically modified, if you want to call it that, hybridized, which means it's been genetically altered, or I'm just going to say polluted wheat, you know, things like Roundup and other chemicals, maybe that is not so healthy for the human body. And if you have a genetic predisposition toward not tolerating wheat, what happens, and it's really the last ditch effort of the immune system, if you have these wheat proteins that are escaping the lining of the gut, that would be called leaky gut, and they're passing through the lining of the gut, and they're getting in the bloodstream, your immune system has no choice at that point. It's going to produce very highly specific antibodies against it. And when you produce antibodies against something, you're recognizing it as the evil enemy. this is just an example, but let's just say that when you were a child, you were exposed to the chickenpox virus. Okay? Well, if the immune system is doing its job, it'll say, hey, what are you doing here? And after a period of time, it starts generating or producing antibodies against the chickenpox virus. And so it runs its course, you heal, you get the scabs off your forehead like I had. I think I still have a few holes in my head. And so what if I come in contact with that chickenpox virus today? At the roller skating rink. Y'all didn't know I did that every Saturday. I go to the roller skating rink because they play the Bee Gees. I'm just joking. But if I come in contact with a kid that has the chickenpox virus and that enters my body through breathing it in or shaking hands or, you know, scratching my eye after shaking hands, well, then simply my immune system says, I recognize that. Let's ramp up production of antibodies, and we'll start producing antibodies against that chickenpox virus so you won't get it, Roy. Well, that serves a good purpose. But what if we're consuming a food substance over and over and over again, and the immune system is in a complete catastrophic failure at getting it under control, so the last thing it wants to do is start generating huge amounts of antibodies? But it will if you give it no other options. The problem is, folks, these antibodies may actually settle in to the lining of the gut and start severe damage. Have you ever seen a case of celiac disease? I have. It will rip you to shreds. You know what the solution is? Or at least part of it? Part of the solution is simply avoid the toxic substance that's causing damage to your body and your immune system. So yes, it's an autoimmune disease. Now, what I want to ask you is, what's the solution here? Do we take more drugs to control the symptoms of celiac disease? Do we give lots of steroids? Do we give autoimmune medications that are hugely made from unborn babies? Yeah, that's how they do it. I don't care what anybody says, that's exactly what they're doing. But I want to present a study to you. I can tell you what the solution is. You may have to strictly avoid wheat to avoid the very trigger causing your immune system to overproduce antibodies. But in one person with celiac disease, it may be it settles in the lining of their gut, and that's where the damage is taking place. Well, how long does it take once you stop eating wheat for that to all calm down? Well, antibodies usually have a lifespan of between 2 and 3 months, maybe 4 months in some people, depending on their circumstances. So if you have high levels of antibodies in the bloodstream, they're working and attacking and causing a lot of collateral damage and inflammation all after you had exposure to gluten the month before. But this is the first time I have ever read anything like this. I know it's my job to know these things, but I can't know everything, can I? No. Listen to this right here. Here's the question. Well, you know, I have problems, but maybe just a little bit will be good for me. That can't hurt me, can it? Well, listen to this, folks. There was a landmark study published, and I think I misquoted this one twice this week, but even though I did misquote it, it doesn't really change the seriousness of the matter. I think I got some of the numbers wrong, so forgive me. I think I said 5 years instead of 20. So anyway, here goes. At least this is my attempt to make it right. So if I mentioned to you, I told two people this study this week, and I think I got the numbers wrong both times. But that doesn't matter. Just here goes. In a landmark study published in The Lancet in the year 2001, that means that was 15 years ago, patients were followed for more than 20 years, and their eating patterns were recorded. Are you with me so far? And it was found that those patients who ate gluten, and that's just a protein that's found in wheat, so how do you get gluten? You eat wheat. Listen to this. It was found that those patients who ate gluten once per month, even if they did not feel bad, what happened was they suffered tremendous consequences. And here's the exact quote from the researchers in the study. And I quote, "Non-adherence to the gluten-free diet, defined as eating gluten once per month." Okay? They're saying if you didn't follow it perfectly to the law, but you just had it once a month, that's just one chocolate chip cookie. Why could that hurt, right? That's a pretty good human logic and reasoning, wouldn't you agree? They increase the relative risk of death sixfold. Folks, that's 600% more death than if they hadn't had that cracker or cookie or spoonful of pasta or noodles or macaroni and cheese or a beer that's made from wheat. Well, is that fair? Does that seem like a really high price to pay for eating a cupcake at a birthday party? When your immune system continues making elevated levels of antibodies, it's a very serious thing in the big picture. If you want to destroy yourself, keep doing the very thing that damages you. Maybe what I could say is, you might actually convince yourself that what you're doing is right. Don't you think I know this? I talk to people all day long, almost without interruption. If I get through with a client 10 minutes earlier, I hit the phones if I'm not able to get to them. I'm able to take about 11 to 12 phone calls a day without letting it go to the answering machine. I probably return an additional 15 to 20 calls a day in between clients. And I know, I talk to people. And I know that there are some people that are really trying to convince themselves that what I'm eating is not that big of a deal. But on this very silent, quiet process, the body is being damaged and being destroyed. I might be talking to myself more than I am anybody else, because I feel like I need to talk to myself about this today. Do you want to have radiant health that allows you to preserve your wealth? Have you ever heard that health is wealth? Or do we want to say, we're going to turn your wealth into... I'm not going to say that. Never mind. But you know, I already mentioned it. There is a better way to use your savings and your retirement account than on disease care. And if you don't get the idea that it's your job to take care of yourself, okay, I don't know what it's going to take. Is it going to take a complete catastrophic failure? You know, I think that most people are very, very reasonable. I know for a fact people are in denial. Oh, my word. Even from this last week, if you could have heard some of the things that came out of people's mouth, I know for a fact they're in complete total denial. If I were to gently take my fingers and press into a person's stomach and they scream and cry out in pain, they tell me that severe stabbing pain is piercing through into their spine or their back, and they're passing a dark black tarry stool, wouldn't it tell you they probably have an ulcer? Now, they can tell me that everything's great in their body, that they're not sick. But if you can't hold a job and you can't go to work and all you can do is just watch soap operas, that's not real productive, folks. All right. If you want to join me on the radio and you want to ask me a question about health, please feel free to do so. I am your humble servant today. And the phone number is 903-586-5257. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm quite well, Dr. Morgan. I am a healthy 62-year-old female. Don't have any disease, but I tell you what, I have some killer leg cramps. It happens during the night or early in the morning, sometimes in the late evening time. And I feel like it's probably due to something I'm not getting in my diet. So could you help me with that, please?
So you said killer leg cramps. That means they're really, really bad?
Well, to me, they are. And they go down the shin of my legs into the feet. And,
so if you turn your foot just the right direction and stretch like a cat, it could start a spasm, right?
Yeah.
Woo! Well, I don't envy you. All right. Are you taking any prescription drugs at all?
Synthroid is my only drug.
That could be the problem. But anyway, let's get past that because, can I give you an example real quick?
Please.
Okay. I'm not saying it's relevant, and it's probably an extreme example, but about once a year, I'm going to have a woman that comes in my office, and she's going to say this to me. She's going to say, I have uncontrollable diarrhea. I haven't had a normal stool in years. And being just the great investigator I am, I'm really sort of joking about that. I'll ask them, well, when did this start? And they'll say it was 2 years ago. And then I'll say something like, well, can you think of any change in medication that may have taken place prior to this? And they'll say, no, nothing. Well, I see here that you're taking Synthroid or levothyroxine. And then they'll say, yeah, but I've been taking that for 2 years. And I'll say, is there any chance that you were prescribed that medication before these cramps start? And they'll go, you know, I hadn't thought about that, but I think that's correct. Yes, I think it was in December of 2014, I'll just say 2013, that I started taking Synthroid. So when did the cramps start again? Well, that was 6 months later. I'm sorry, when did the diarrhea start? 6 months later. It is a classic finding with thyroid medication. If you're, and this is all I'm going to suggest to you, if you are given more of it than what your body truly needs or requires, then you can have everything from severe cramps to bone loss to diarrhea. So I don't have a magical way of knowing what the dose is and what your needs are. But
so, I don't think I can come completely off of it.
Well, that's not what I'm suggesting. The only thing I'm suggesting is if they exceed what your needs are, then you will have hasten mineral loss. And maybe what I really wanted to say was, if there was a drug that could definitely cause severe osteoporosis, meaning tremendous mineral loss of the bones, it would be prednisone. And so it's not a big mystery. If somebody's taking a lot of corticosteroids and prednisone, sometimes their bones are like paper. They sneeze and a bone breaks. But then again, that's after years of taking it. Well, I kind of feel the same way about overdoing Synthroid. So I'm not trying to terrify you or scare you and tell you you don't need that. I'm just suggesting if you take more than what you actually require, then you're going to have tremendous mineral loss.
Okay.
And so if we can solve why you're having this, you know what I could have said? I could have skipped all this information. I could have said, stick a bar of soap down by your ankles and feet at night, and the cramps will stop. And
that I do sleep with one.
Well, it does help, doesn't it?
Well,
just answer this. How much, and you don't have to be perfect, what is the dose of Synthroid? Because usually I've never seen cramps at 25 micrograms.
Okay, hold on, I'm looking for my bottle.
By the way, I don't appreciate you telling me you're 62 because you sound more like you're 26. Because I know age and voice when I hear it.
Well, actually, in my mind, I'm 18.
Well, see, now you're being honest. You are like an 18.
I do take levothyroxine, and it's 100 micrograms.
Well, I'm just telling you. That is an extremely significant dose. Now, that doesn't make me right or wrong about this. I'm suggesting is at that dose, it would be very highly likely that you're losing minerals at a faster rate than what you can hold on to them. So it's like anything else. If it caused diarrhea, could you imagine that you're going to have some pretty significant... Anyway, here's the punchline. If a woman had diarrhea from being overdosed on levothyroxine, do you think that maybe in this there might be a threshold that if it was lowered to 66 micrograms and all of a sudden the diarrhea stops, would that be significant? Well, I would say so.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I think 100 is a big number.
Okay, so I just talked to my physician about this and asked him to reduce the dosage and just switch my prescription.
Well, you know what you can do? You can always educate yourself.
Okay.
I don't even understand it the way that I should, but in Hosea chapter 4, verse 6, my people are destroyed from a lack of knowledge. And see, you're not in denial, but I know what denial looks like. Oh, I'm perfectly healthy, you know, I have, you know, a high PSA, and they just had to do a TURP procedure on my prostate, but I'm the epitome of health. Well, I'm going, well, you're kind of living in denial, buddy. So if you go and do your research and just look up all potential side effects from taking just a hair too much levothyroxine, you're probably going to say, all right, I'm going to walk into the doctor's office and I'm going to copy off this information and say, is that possible? Because I would say that your body needs electrolytes. And electrolytes are going to be minerals that have this electrical charge to them. So whether we call that, now this is going to be my take on it. When I mentioned earlier that too much thyroid can cause osteoporosis, I guess what I'm really referring to is calcium loss. And so this is just very short and simple and to the point, but if we have too much calcium loss, sometimes those are the most wicked, bad news, Magruder spasms and cramps of all time. And a lot of times when it's magnesium that's a problem, you have very annoying, moderately bad cramps, but if it was potassium, those are usually the very mild cramps. Now, I'm not trying to make a panacea out of that, but it's calcium. If you're low in calcium, oh my goodness, those are the ones that will grab you and get your attention. And that's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so you're not taking baby aspirin, are you? Because that's been shown to cause significant calcium loss also.
No, I am not.
Do you ever take fish oil?
I do daily.
How much do you take, do you mind if I ask?
Oh, goodness gracious, now I've got to go look for that bottle.
Remember, you're 18 in the mind, so you have a photographic memory.
I run back and forth like this looking for my bottles. 360 milligrams.
360?
Yes, sir.
You may have
No, I'm sorry, that's a the omega-3 that's in there. 12,000.
How many?
100.
Well, usually, if I had bad cramps, I might go upwards to 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams of cod liver oil a day and see if that has a preserving effect. So, I know these are complex things, and I'm not trying to be difficult. I really want to be helpful to you. But I would say some things that you could do to help offset this. You could try wetting your finger on your tongue and just touching Celtic salt and sucking on that. But right before you go to bed, tell me if the cramps don't happen at night. They can be just enough to tilt the balance in your favor. Number two, you could try taking
a... Wait, the Celtic salt is the pink salt.
That'll work too, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, obviously, since you're a girl, it's got to be pink salt.
Well, absolutely.
Can I ask you a personal question? And I'm really serious about this. If you went to Walmart to purchase a bulb syringe, would it have to be turquoise color for a boy, or would it have to be pink for a girl?
Well, those are my two favorite colors, so I don't care which one it is.
Okay, I did not foresee that answer, but that's a good response. Well, anyway, so yes, pink salt's going to work fine. Just grind it on a little bit plate saucer, wet your finger on your tongue, whatever comes off on your finger. I'd prefer the fingers to be clean. Hey, okay. You know what? If I were you, I would have a grandchild who's been playing in the backyard wet his finger and then do it, and you could suck his...
Yeah, thank you.
No. No, that's one thing you could do right there. The other thing that you can do to help restore balance is you could try just 1/4 of a teaspoon of baking soda and a little bit of water, and you could drink that before bedtime.
Okay. Those are easy things.
Oh, yeah, those are all easy things right there, and let me know what happens, but... 100 micrograms, oh, that makes me really suspicious. Doesn't mean I'm right or wrong.
Okay.
But I would rather address why it's happening, and if we can restore balance to the body, then you can be, just think, 10 years from now, you can be a radiant 21-esque-year-old woman in the mind.
Well, I love it.
I love it, too.
I'm going to do that. Thank you.
Good.
So much.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Lord bless you. Bye.
Thank you very much. May the Lord bless you likewise. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If you want to join me on the air, there's a phone line open. You may not know this, but there is no screening of the phone calls. I just pick up... I don't even know how many radio stations do that. This may be the only one in America, but I completely trust you. So turn your radio down. Here we go. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm fine, Dr. Morgan. Say, I just got a quick fix for that gal with the cramps.
Mm-hmm.
My aunt told me this, and her son told it to her because he's a motorcycle guy. The guys that ride motorcycles carry packs of yellow mustard with them because they get cramps. So I used to get these big cramps in the back of my thigh, about the size of a baseball. I got up one night and downed a tablespoon of plain old yellow mustard, and the cramp was gone in actually seconds.
I love it. That is a great suggestion. I'm so tickled you called with that advice. That's wonderful.
It seems to last quite a while. I mean, when I get dehydrated, sweating a lot, I'll take a tablespoon of that stuff before I go to bed. That way I don't wake up with them in the night.
Oh, that's fabulous. Do you know what yellow mustard contains by chance?
Turmeric, I think.
Mm-hmm. You know what else it contains? Garlic.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm, it does. You know what else it contains? Vinegar.
Oh.
Vinegar. So, I would say I am totally on board with you. You don't know this, but the speakers here in the station are about as yellow as humanly possible. Couldn't be more yellow. It's kind of comical. But, yeah, the turmeric or curcumin, that is a good call. That has tremendous anti-inflammatory properties. I love it. You made my day, buddy.
Yeah, the only thing is if you've got Parkinson's or something like that, then your cramps are coming from the brain, so it won't help in that case.
Do you know what they're calling Parkinson's disease now? They're calling it completely an autoimmune disease, which means you have 4 decades of your immune system producing antibodies against that specific nucleus that produces dopamine called the substantia nigra. And if doctors don't recognize that, then the only hope you have is, instead of stopping it in its tracks 40 years earlier, all we can do is give drugs for it, which don't fix anything. So, that's probably too much information.
Well, I've got a friend that has Parkinson's disease, and it's a terrible thing.
It is.
All right, well,
all right.
Have a good day.
You too. Thanks a bunch, buddy. I really appreciate your phone call. You made my day.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, if you want to join me on the radio, 903-586-5257. All right, here we go. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. You did it.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right.
My question's about how to control cellulitis. That's kind of a general term, but someone who chronically gets cellulitis about every year.
Yeah, that is a tough one. And I'm just
my question is, we treat it by doing foot soaks in cold water and then hot water, you know, like Epsom salt, hot water, and then cold water to increase circulation.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So what else can we do, like, internally? We do external things, like cypress oil.
Can I tell you what the main problem is?
Mm-hmm.
It's just horrible blood sugar control.
Blood sugar control?
Totally. And so ask me a question. Ask me, who would be the group of individuals that have the most cellulitis?
Diabetics?
Every single time, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you have is you have this process to where there's just excessive inflammation because of poor blood sugar control. And so the consequence is you're just going to hold a whole bunch of debris. And that's what cellulitis is. You have just toxic debris that's causing your immune system to go bonkers. Half the time, they're always infections, if not more.
Okay, that answers my question.
Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is I read an article this morning where they compared infection rates among people that exercise regularly and those that don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is just one example, but is this really a big stretch for you to believe that if a person consistently walked 2 miles a day, and I just kind of arbitrarily chose that, if you're walking 2 miles a day at a brisk pace, don't you think that the body probably does a little bit better job of increasing the rate of blood flow and the speed of blood flow and the clearance of waste and debris? So you're washing your muscles and your cells and your skin. All that debris is coming out of you when you walk. That makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this was just with colds, but they said that people that walk daily, if they get a cold, it lasts for 5 days, but people that don't walk every day, they get a cold for 9 days. Now, that's factual. But one thing that happens is when you walk every day, you improve what's called insulin resistance. And so this individual that has a cellulitis, I can almost guarantee you the blood sugar is not going to be at 70 milligrams per deciliter on a blood test. No. It's going to be a whole lot higher than that. Now, this person that has that, do you know if they're pre-diabetic or diabetic?
Their lab work's never shown that they were.
Well, I think I would probably look at the lab work a little bit differently than the average physician, because I'm looking in terms of, is there room for improvement here?
Mm-hmm.
And the good news is sometimes even just small improvements is enough to turn the tide.
Mm-hmm.
So this person that has cellulitis, I wonder if they'd jump on a rebounder for 10 minutes a day.
So if this person also has a history of fungal nails, is the infection, does that kind of show you that there's something internally always going to be stirred up?
It's really the same thing, because the number one predictor of fungal infection of a nail bed is low oxygen.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that happens when you go for a brisk walk. You increase oxygen saturation of your blood.
Okay.
That's probably what I should have said about diabetes. As blood sugar starts to go up, and I'm just going to give you some numbers I'm making up, when it hits like 89 and above, that's when your oxygen levels start going down.
So,
fungal infections. Where there's oxygen, there cannot be fungus. Last time I checked, a fungus only likes dead stuff with no oxygen in it.
Gotcha now. Okay. So I would like one quick question on a follow-up on a while ago when you were talking about the person that had thyroxine and prednisone.
Well, normally I would never allow that, because you're special. You can ask me 25 follow-up questions if you want.
Oh, wow. Well, because my mother-in-law has that severe pain, you know, like in the bones, you know, like, and then I started associating what you said, you know, like she has prednisone, thyroxine for 40, 50 years. So,
are you serious? 40 mm-hmm. or 50 years of those?
Yeah, she's 97 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, okay, so you said do a fourth of a teaspoon of baking soda?
Yeah, that's one thing that you can do.
And then the pink salt?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know what? You're trying to help. Here's probably what I should have said.
Mm-hmm.
You have two organ systems in the body. One would be called your respiratory tract, or your the lungs is what I'm referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one would be the kidneys. Now, I do not know everything there is to know about the lungs or the kidneys. I probably know more than the average person, but then again, that's what I like doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so those two organs in and of themselves, they probably do more to maintain and regulate the good, healthy pH of the body more so than any other systems. I don't even think anything else even comes close.
Mm-hmm.
So eating and breathing, and so lungs and kidneys, has more to do with how acidic or how alkaline your body is than probably anything else. And so if we looked at one end of the spectrum of the pH scale, we might find out that drinking Mountain Dew or drinking Pepsi-Cola or, what can I say, root beer, those are all very, very acidic substances. Now, sugar in and of itself is highly acidic. And if it contains phosphoric acid, that's really, really acidic. So would you agree with me that if you want to really acidify the body, which means that's against health, you should mm-hmm. drink soft drinks, because it's going to make your body more acid. At the other end of the spectrum, oh my word, you have things like greens and vegetables and asparagus and broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower, just greens, lemons, limes, all those are alkaline. But probably one of the more alkaline substances that's been around for thousands upon thousands of years that I know of would be called sodium bicarbonate or baking soda. So always think, if a person's really in dire straits with their legs,
mm-hmm.
this might be an indication to start adding a little bit of just plain Jane baking soda and a little bit of water.
Wow.
So somewhere between a fourth of a teaspoon and a half of a teaspoon might be warranted.
And that's to change the pH to alkaline?
Well, that's not the only thing it does. That's just one of the sales pitches I gave you today. It does a whole lot more than that. But I think that, okay, I'm going to say this, and I can't prove it to you in the short time that I have, but can I say that helps oxygen levels of the body? I mean, you just have to take my word for it.
Oh, the baking soda helps oxygen levels?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Okay.
In a roundabout way.
So a fourth of a teaspoon only once a day, or how much can you take of it?
No, that's usually all I have to do is one, mm-hmm. just 1/4 to 1/2 teaspoon once a day in water.
Okay.
And so it's an aid. It's not a panacea, obviously.
It's an aid. Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, you're coming to the table with a clean spoon, which means you're going to say, all right, if this person is shoveling in their body boatloads of sugar all day long and refined junk food, there's not really, there's no way I'm going to tell you that baking soda is going to counter all that.
Okay, so like this lady lives in her own house, and her grandson, great-grandsons, they come at night, so instead of pain pills, just have them give her baking soda to try to calm down the leg pain?
Yeah, you sure could. You got nothing to lose.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Of course, I am really agreeable here. If a physician or a nurse or a physician's assistant spends time, or a nurse practitioner, if they spend time with a patient and they say, we think we know why the 97-year-old woman has horrible, horrible leg pain, and they give a remedy for that, I am all for that, folks. But until we do that, there's going to be a lot of human suffering. Good morning. Welcome to the program. I'm Dr. Morgan.
Well, good morning, old friend. I haven't talked to you in several years, but you really, really helped me with my daughter's bleeding feet. And anyway, I just had a test.
Bleeding feet?
Bleeding, cracking feet. She was about 11.
Oh,
and,
boy.
I took her to the doctor. He gave her Cordate and Zyrtec. And she had bleeding, cracking feet. She was a swimmer. I thought it was maybe athlete's feet. He said no, because she wasn't in puberty yet. She couldn't have gotten athlete's feet. But anyway, yeah, that's what he gave her. And I was on the internet. Everybody was like, put this paste on it. Put this cream. She needs more water. Well, Lord led me to you. I called you, and you said she is deficient in fatty acids. She needs fish oil.
Wow.
And her, anyway, But that's not, I was just calling to tell you.
Well, that's still good news, though. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, it completely healed up. Her little mouth was flying open like a little bird, you know, mama feeding the bird. She wanted her feet to, she'd pull off her socks and the blood would just stick to it. So
oh, my word.
It was awful. But
I almost wish I had a video of that. You know the reason why? Or actually, I wish I had pictures, because I was looking at a magazine advertisement the other day, and it showed a drug for severe psoriasis of the feet. And they were saying, after taking this drug for 6 months, look how better they are. And I'm thinking, what, are they 10% better? I mean, I couldn't tell that much of a difference. I'm going, is that the best you've got? You would always think that if an advertiser puts forth a before and after picture, you want to see a pretty stark, you know, contrast that makes it look like they're
exactly.
And this, well, I'm going, really? That's all that prescription drug can do? That's the pits. Anyway.
Well, I'm so upset with the male community because of that. You know, they didn't give her what she needed internally. You know, they anyway. And now I'm so upset because I've been taking Synthroid for about 15 years. I'm 55. I just went and had my bone density. I have severe osteoporosis in my lower back, and I'm at a significant risk of bone fracture. And, of course, she's prescribed me Fosamax, which I don't want to take because it's esophagus something.
You know full well I wasn't trying to be destructive by talking about Synthroid this morning. I didn't even know we were talking about that today. So, sorry.
Well, no, that was my question. And she just happened to say something about it. But my question was, I called my doctor. Number one, why didn't they tell me when they put me on Synthroid, take extra calcium because it's going to leak it out of your bones? No, they didn't tell me that. So, but my question now is, I called my doctor and I said, I'm getting off the Synthroid and I want the Armour thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to an endocrinologist several years back, and she said, that's archaic. I will not, you have to find another doctor. I will not prescribe that.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Man.
And so, but my doctor, this doctor, she's actually a nurse practitioner. She did call me in a prescription for the Armour.
Are you kidding me? Sometimes they do a superior job. I probably shouldn't have said that, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, she called me in the Armour thyroid, so I'm just wondering, is that do the same as the Synthroid or not?
All right.
Am I okay with
I am not trying to be a difficult person today, but I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Why is your thyroid not working right? What's the root cause of it? What's behind it? Why is it not able to work properly as God designed it to? Why?
I don't know.
Well,
you know, I got off
well,
it
can
for
you
about
ask the
nurse?
I know, but can you ask the nurse practitioner? Because if you don't do that, then we could have conversations all day long about what should I do about Cytomel, or how should I do WP thyroid, or Armour thyroid, or Nature thyroid, or levothyroxine. You could just or Synthroid. We keep going and going and going, but the real issue is there was a time in my life that my thyroid worked perfectly. It served me well. Why has it stopped working properly? If you don't answer that, then you're going to be just more of the same, and we can have the conversation. Now, I'm going to agree with you. I would much prefer a natural thyroid like Armour to the levothyroxine. I'm on board with that. I'm just being a little troublemaker today by asking why is the thyroid not working right. Now, I'm going to interject 2 points here, and they're not a panacea. But I'm going to say that 95% of the thyroid control is based on the adrenal glands, what they do.
Yeah. So if I drink too much coffee, I don't sleep.
Let's just talk about the bones, for example. What time of the day do the bones repair themselves? Is it during the day? No. It's only when you're in that deep, deep delta wave sleep. So there may be something else that needs to be fixed in order to get to the equation.
Well, I don't know. I got off my thyroid medicine. I probably shouldn't have for about 3 months because I just was curious. Do I really need it? And it was like an 11 point something. It's supposed to be a 0 point. So,
well,
you know,
how long had you taken thyroid medication for?
About 15
years. Well, it's probably going to be, and I'm just being very honest with you. I know you want me to be. You don't want me to deceive you, but you're probably going to need some thyroid medication the rest of your life. It's going to be a question of, can we greatly improve your estrogen and progesterone levels? The answer is yes. Can we improve the normal functioning of the adrenals where they actually respond appropriately instead of overdoing steroids or underdoing? Yes. Can we improve how the thyroid functions? Yes. I know you've heard me say this before, but I'm going to repeat it one more time. Would you care to guess, from a study that took place back in the year 2000, which group of women had the most thyroid problems? It was women that used non-stick cookware.
I remember you saying that, yeah.
So you don't even use a black plastic spatula to cook with, do you? Because it's non-stick, and it's going to leach into your thyroid.
Yeah, I do. I was using the cookware and then not even thinking about the utensils. I mean, I use my iron skillet.
Well, that's not the iron skillet's not the problem.
Stainless steel. I know.
That's not
I'm
the problem.
I changed to my good stuff, the iron skillet and my stainless, and then I'm using the black plastic.
You don't by chance like microwave popcorn, do you?
No, I don't eat it.
Well, that's what they coat the bags with. Teflon.
Okay. Well, my last question before you have to go is my friend just came in from Trader Joe's and bought me some, or no, she went to Sprouts.
Unfortunately, I have 2 seconds left in the program, so if you'll call me next week, you can ask a question, okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
Thank you, ma'am. You have
I'll
a good
do.
Day. God
thank
bless.
You.
Bye-bye. All right. You're listening to KBGS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, and Longview.